The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms ammunition. Visit them online at kylesgunshop.com. I'm your host, John Johnston. I was going to do it, and then I couldn't. Remember, you can always check out past episodes at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me this evening is Mr. Andy Ulrich. Andy, how's it going?
Pretty good. You're a little hoarse. You're almost like a kid that came back from the amusement park.
Oh, yeah. I had an interesting weekend. See, someone else, I'm betting that you don't listen to epic rap battles of history. But
No.
Anyway, I was going to do it. I couldn't. Maybe next show. what we're going to be talking about tonight is the Salient Arms International Mark 25 test of their Tier 1 prototype. Also going to be discussing some online questions that you guys sent in. If you'd like to call, we will be taking calls shortly, 513-749-5500, 1-800-823-8255, any firearms-related topic. For those that missed it last week or the week before when I started talking about it, we are doing a 25,000-round torture test of, like I said, the Salient Arms International Mark 25 Tier 1 prototype. Right now we're about 9,000 rounds into it. Should hit 10 or 11 tomorrow. We will see. I actually spent Saturday in Atlanta taking part in a film shoot, something. It was very strange. Shot for all day, you know. So that was, I got to shoot a Glock 18. That was kind of nice.
that was probably the coolest thing I've ever seen.
What, did you like that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Anything with the happy switch is fun.
Well, I was just impressed. I'm like, wow, I really didn't let that gun move at all.
No, you didn't. It was excellent form.
I appreciate that. I've been getting some practice lately. So what we're doing is shooting, like I said, 25,000 rounds through this pistol in the next 2 weeks. Almost halfway through it, or at least I'm saying that to myself so I don't get depressed and stop. My hands are starting to show signs of wear.
Yeah.
And by signs of wear, I mean splitting open and callousing and things like that. But so far, so good.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Or at least, yeah, my hands will probably look like catcher's mitts by the end of this. So far, it's been interesting to do this just because a lot of people kind of, you know, the gun is heavily modified, and whether or not you like that, whether or not you think that's useful, I actually was kind of one of those people that was like, oh, cosmetic stuff, it doesn't really do that much, but hey, whatever. Salient was nice enough to ask me help them develop their SIG platform just because I shoot SIGs a lot. I'm really impressed so far. Like I said, we are sitting at 9,169 rounds as of yesterday. I actually took a day off from shooting today just because I was in the car driving back from Atlanta. But what's interesting to me is there's been exactly one malfunction out of the 9,169 rounds we fired. And I've actually narrowed that down to an out-of-spec part. So I'm counting it as a malfunction because it happened, but in my mind, I really think that, you know, if that part hadn't been in there in the first place, it probably wouldn't have happened at all. And
you,
I understand.
You saw it. I mean, we were standing there. You saw that long before it actually. You said, this is going to be an issue. And it turned out it pretty much became one pretty quickly.
It actually made it 3,000 rounds before
it
had a problem.
That's pretty impressive, really.
Yeah. What we're talking about is there was actually a Wolf recoil spring in the gun. It was a 14-pound recoil spring as opposed to a 15-pound recoil spring. They were just trying to change the spring rates to in the gun. What ended up happening is the end of the spring got caught in between the guide rod and the dust cover of the gun, locked it up completely. Andy and I had to pound on it a little bit with a hammer and all that. So pretty significant malfunction. But like I said, that's the only one there's been out of 9,000 rounds, and I'm pretty impressed. I actually think, like I said, it probably wouldn't have malfunctioned at all yet. But that's kind of the point. A lot of people are kind of, I think they're missing the point of what we're doing too. It is a prototype. It's not a production gun. The entire idea is to break it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty much
see what it'll take.
Yeah, that's pretty much what they asked me to do. And that's part of the 25,000 rounds in 2 weeks. Hopefully, I don't break before the gun does, and it'd be nice if neither one of us broke. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of what we're doing right now. There are some visual modifications to the gun that you could argue are unnecessary, you know, as far as forward cocking serrations and all that. I don't mind them. I don't require them for how I shoot. You know, I could take it or leave it. The slide lightning is actually something that I like a lot more than I thought I would.
The gun just stays flat when you're shooting.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like this is a race gun. This thing is still a fighting pistol. It's most definitely a fighting pistol.
Yeah,
there's no doubt.
Yeah, I've been, well, you know, the video shoot Saturday was in a gravel bay, and I actually almost made someone cry because one of the shots that we were doing was, you know, dump a magazine, gun's hot, it's kind of smoking a little bit, slides locked back, and then drop it in the gravel.
Yeah.
You know, with the slide locked back, which anyone will tell you, dropping a gun with the slide locked back is not really advisable for multiple reasons. You know, the gun ran fine. It continues to run fine. It's meeting or exceeding my expectations in almost every way. You know, the one nitpick I have is maybe with the finish, but everyone else likes Cerakote. I just have found something that I like better, you know, so I can't even really say it's a nitpick per se. It's just been a lot of fun. I've been seeing some performance gains just with the amount of practice that I've been getting. It's been kind of nice because Andy's been there for some of it and actually seen that I'm not making it up,
which is
kind of nice. I'm doing some things that I did not think were possible for me to do, and I don't know how much of that's the gun or the practice. I'd like to think it's probably a combination of the two.
It is. You don't that long range stuff you're doing there, and you know that's not a fluke. So you can't fake that.
No.
So
no, not really. Well, and, you know, like we've come up with a new drill, too. And if someone else has already done this and there's a name for it, I don't know it. But essentially, we're doing a build drill, which is draw and fire 6 shots at 7 yards, generally at an 8-inch or 6-inch circle. Mm-hmm. We've been doing it into a 3x5-inch head zone. And it's been a really nice drill for working speed and accuracy and recoil control. Really, the only thing it lacks is a reload, and it would be a pretty comprehensive drill. I've been doing a lot of that, also fast drills because I'm a big fan of those. It's just been kind of nice to get to go out and shoot every day and not worry about, you know, well, I've got limited ammunition. I need to worry about what I want to train or not train.
It's actually more of a pain trying to collect the brass and miss anything else.
Yeah, and when I felt bad too because they had like 2 or 3 guys this weekend that were on their hands and knees just picking brass up because I forgot to bring a tarp and you know, anyway, sorry guys, I really do apologize, you know. So anyway, what else have we got going on? I've got some interesting Chris Costa news, which I will share after the break coming up. Also, some listener questions. Like I said, you can call in at 513-749-5500, 1-800-823-8255. No one on the line right now. We will take your calls. Right now, though, we need to go to break. So you are listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
Wealthy and wise. Steve Perrin, Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Visit them online, kylesgunshop.com. So, right now we're talking about the Salient Mark 25 prototype, the torture test we are doing of that. We've also got some online listener questions that I'm going to get to shortly. And all sorts of goodness. I did promise some Chris Costa news. Turns out he will be coming on the show next Sunday. I know there are a lot of people that are interested in following Chris and some of the things that he does. I'm very, very thankful to call him a friend. I'm not saying I go drink beer with him at the end of the day, but I've dealt with him now a couple times, and he's always been really cool with me. So, hey. But The other interesting thing that Chris is doing right now, he just came out with that, what would you call that? Tactical commercial?
Yeah, kind of.
It's actually an interesting concept, and I know that he's been catching some flack for it. You know, full disclosure, like I said, I like Chris. He's a friend of mine. I can see some of the things they're saying if you take it as, you know, oh, this is, it's not a tactics video. It's a piece of Hollywood. It's really cool, though, and everyone's talking about the pelvic girdle shot heard around the world. And, yes, I did steal that from you, Trevor. I'm sorry. I recorded a video response to that this weekend, and hopefully I will have it back from the production company before he appears on the show next Sunday, just because I think that would be fun. The other interesting thing, I know I've kind of talked about this a little bit earlier in the segment, the last segment, that is, the Salient, like I said, hit 9,100 rounds. What I found really interesting was my second day update I did on the website. I don't remember, second or third day. We'd hit 4,000 rounds with the pistol. That actually has gotten 90,000 views in the last, three or four days since it's been posted. The amount of attention the test is drawing is really, really just, and I hate to say this, absurd to me, but I'm very appreciative that you guys have decided to care about what I am doing, and I will continue to try and keep you updated on the pistol and the problems or lack thereof that it experiences during the torture test. So, anyway, going to some of the online questions. We had Kyle Shepard asked me about when is a gun reliable or when is it not reliable, and how do you look at malfunctions and say, you know, you have a malfunction, is that to be expected, or how do you judge that, whether or not the gun is good to go or not after it has a malfunction? The industry standard that I've heard thrown around for quite some time now, whether or not it's not an official standard, but I've heard it enough times now that it's kind of what I expect from a pistol is one malfunction for every 2,500 rounds. Mm-hmm. That's acceptable. It's a man-made item. It is not going to work 100% of the time. It's just not. Now, one out of 2,500 rounds, that's really not much. You know, if your gun has more than one malfunction in 2,500 rounds, I would be very concerned, especially if I could not track it down and figure out exactly why it had the malfunction. Generally, I know why a gun malfunctions once it happens. I can say, well, you know, the magazine didn't place the bullet in the right place to cycle properly, or the extractor didn't grab the rim of the cartridge. There's usually a reason why a malfunction happens. When a gun starts randomly malfunctioning and you can't figure out why, that's probably time to send it back to the factory or get rid of it. As far as expecting a pistol to not have any malfunctions, when you put enough rounds through a gun, it's going to happen, period. Hands down, going to happen. You know, Todd Green, who is the king of endurance tests and a buddy of mine and someone I look up to, his most reliable pistol that he had was the HK-45 that he tested. He put 50,000 rounds through that, and I want to say it only had two malfunctions out of 50,000 rounds, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. But that was still two malfunctions. So, you know, that's where I'm at on that subject. The problem becomes, and you hear about people, well, you know, when my gun malfunctions, I get rid of it, blah, blah, blah. The reason for that is when you only put 1,000 to 2,000 rounds through a gun in the entire time that you own it, then yes, if you see a malfunction when none of your other guns have malfunctioned, I could see where you would maybe think that's a big deal.
But are they comparing it to another gun they've only put 1,000 rounds through? Because in the life of a gun, that's really nothing.
Well, no. I mean, and a perfect example is like the pistol that we're doing right now. It's 9,000 rounds in a week and, 8 days, 9 days, mm-hmm. something like that. I've cleaned it once, you know? And that's, it's just, guns work better than people think they do. They do not require as much maintenance as people think they do. Lubrication is always good, but you know, I've shot the lubrication off of this pistol a couple times now just because of the amount of rounds that I'm putting through it and the heat that it is experiencing during the test. I don't know. Firearms reliability is kind of a personal decision, too. We've all got our own things that we do or don't do. It just really depends on how you feel about it. But to kind of swing back around to the original question, you know, one malfunction every 2,500 rounds, I don't feel bad about that.
That could be ammo. That could be several things.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's... We ran into some ammo-related malfunctions that were very clearly ammo-related malfunctions, and that's why I didn't count them towards the gun. Especially with the quality control issues that ammo manufacturers are having lately, trying to keep up with demand. You know, it's going to happen, I guess. The other thing, too, that he sort of mentioned in his comment was break-in periods on guns. I don't think they exist. I tend to believe that a gun will either work or it will not work.
I don't think there should be anything such as a break-in for a gun.
Well, there's not a if you had a break-in period for a car,
right?
How fast would that go back to the dealership?
If you were broke down on the side of the road three times the first week you had it.
Driving another 500 miles and no. If the gun does not work when you first get it and then it starts to work, after X number of rounds, what that is probably the springs getting weakened.
Mm-hmm.
And then for whatever reason, the gun works then. Well, it's not designed right, if that's how that occurs.
Well, so I think some people say, a gun needs to burnish in. No, a gun shouldn't have to burnish in. You shouldn't have to finally lap all the parts together by firing it.
No.
The gun should come ready to go in the box and be suitable to defend yourself with.
Well, and I honestly feel like that a lot of the companies that, and I'm not going to name any names, that espouse break-in periods on their guns do that because they don't want to deal with their problems, and they know that most people won't reach the number of rounds that they set for the break-in period.
Right.
You know, I've seen it a lot in 45s. Like I said, not going to name any names, but if you look around, you could figure out who I'm thinking of. I actually got yelled at for making fun of them last week, I think. Whatever. Some people don't like me very much, I guess. Anyway, that's to answer Kyle's question. Like I said, we do not have anyone on the line right now. So if you have a firearms-related question that you would like to discuss with us, you can get a hold of us, local 513-749-5500, or toll-free 1-800-823-8255. Like I said, no one on the line. We will take your call as long as it's not too off-topic. So... And hey, if you want to call in and tell us what a good job we're doing or bad job we're doing, we always like to hear either one of those. I personally prefer hearing what a bad job I'm doing because that's just kind of, not that I like getting under people's skin or anything, but am I antagonistic towards the listeners sometimes?
I don't get that from you at all.
No, I love the listeners. I'm trying to help the listeners. So answering another question, we've got Eric Andrews. He's asking about putting aftermarket parts into a carry gun for both legal and reliability reasons. He asked what my opinion was on that, especially now that I've been doing the salient test. Well, I'm glad you asked. I think it depends on the part, and I think it depends on what the part accomplishes and whether or not you can articulate why the part was on there. Now, if you take something like a slide fire stock, and let's say that you are in your house at night and someone breaks in and you are forced to shoot them for some reason and you use your slide fire equipped SKS or whatever, that might pose a problem to you because the first thing that's going to happen is the prosecutor's going to go, well, why did you try and get around the machine gun laws?
Right. You don't want to even go there to even try to explain that. You know,
that costs money.
It's your money going down the tubes quickly.
Yeah, when lawyers get involved, we're talking about hundreds of dollars an hour. Mm-hmm. When we get into, you know, use of force cases, we're talking about thousands of dollars an hour.
Right.
Perfect example, Mr. Zimmerman, who was found, how would you say that? He was found not guilty but stupid.
Not guilty, but...
Yeah, something.
But poor judgment.
Yeah, on several fronts. He's going to be poor for the rest of his life, it sounds like.
Yes, I think the last reports was he was in the, like, millions in debt on
yeah.
that.
Yeah, so, and technically he didn't do anything wrong. As far as the justice system is concerned, he did not do anything wrong, yet he's millions of dollars in debt, infamous. Rest of his life is pretty much over. You know, he wanted to be a cop. That's never happening.
No.
I mean, and whether or not it would have happened in the first place is questionable anyway, but just think about what you're doing.
And he used a stock pistol. He just used a stock Kel-Tec.
He had done some trigger work to it, but that was not in question at all. So there's usually other circumstances surrounding a case that are going to affect whether or not your modifications came into play. You know, if you can say, well, I did this because I wanted to be more accurate, or I did this so that...
I have better control of my trigger.
Or things like that, okay.
I get a better grip on the gun. The gun can't be taken away from me, et cetera.
Yeah. If you do stupid things to your gun, and I'm going to let you guys decide what that is. I'm not trying to say what that is, because honestly, it's different between person to person. But there are certainly some things that you can do that would be bad. Here's a good example. Is you see those barrels that have smile, wait for the flash.
Smile, wait for the flash.
Yeah, or something like that.
Or, you know, Malone Le Bay or something like that on there.
That one I don't mind that much. Just
do that to your range gun, you know, if you want to. But I'm not going to.
You know, if...
No.
Yeah. There's all sorts of things. The way you represent yourself can certainly come into play later on. There's been cases of that happening. I know Mas Ayoub is big about preaching. Watch what you say, publicly. You know, so anyway, we'll talk about that some more. Take some of your calls if you guys want to call in. Right now, you are listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
Hey, it's Brian Thomas, Monday in the Morning Show. My dad and I, for the full morning show, not just a Monday morning spleen vent, it's our holiday Christmas special. Tune in, 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle Jindrup in Newtown. Right now, we are talking with ourselves. But if you would like to call in and entertain us, I almost forgot what that word was and how to say it. If you would like to call in and entertain us, you can reach us, 513-749-5500, 1-800-823-8255. I guess I'm just answering everyone's questions, or...
Are you cognizant of your behavior tonight?
Oh, God. Yes, I'm very cognizant of my behavior tonight. So, someone recently made fun of me for using the word cognizant on air too much. But, hey, I did just get an interesting offer from Darkstar Gear. They're saying that to the 10th caller, they will give a free outside-the-waistband holster.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, not too bad.
Good gear.
Call in with a question. 1-800-823-8255. If I get to the 10th caller, we will... hey, look. And the lines light up.
Free stuff. Call.
1-2. Hey, 3. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. So, if we get some more people on the line, we will see. Hey, I could ask some trivia. Ooh.
Are you on your game tonight, listeners?
Could try and stump me. That might be fun, too. So, anyway, I will go back to Eric's question because it was not all the way through. As far as modifications to the gun and whether or not that will affect reliability, it depends on the modification. You just want to reliability test your weapon anyway, especially once you make a change. So... Get some more callers on the line, 1-800-823-8255, like I said. 10th caller is going to get a free outside-the-waistband holster from Darkstar Gear, who makes the Kydex I am using for this test. Mm. You are eagerly awaiting your holster at some point, Andy.
At some point. Some egotistical maniac has like had 4 holsters made for a certain test, and I'm just a flunky, so...
You'll get yours, I'm sure.
I'm using a crappy, and I'm going to say this because it's. I bought the product, a crappy Comptac 2 o'clock that I'm wearing now.
But yeah.
It is what it is. It works for the appendix, but it's not fantastic.
Right. So we will take a call. We've got Edward from Indian Hill. Let's see. Edward, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, okay. My question is about relative to age of ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
Is it safe and okay for me to use old ammunition in my handguns or any guns?
Yes. Yes, it is.
I've got like .22 caliber that's 20 or more years old.
Yeah, it should be fine. I mean, if anything, what you want to be concerned about is if you have really old guns using modern ammunition in it, because sometimes the pressures are different.
No, that's not the issue, yeah.
Yeah, so no, old stuff is fine. I've actually taken part in burning up, you know, ammunition that was 60 or 70 years old.
Really?
Yeah, so it's not really a big deal at all. Unfortunately, Edward, you were not the 10th caller, but I do appreciate you calling in tonight with a question.
Okay.
Hey, you have a good night.
Thanks, bye.
Bye. All righty, that was Edward. So let's see what else we have here. Oh, we've got, I'll take Todd's question next. Right now, free holster to the 10th caller, 1-800-823-8255. I'm not going to tell you how many people we have on the line and see what caller you are, because that would give it away.
Yes.
But it could be any one of you. So, and just because I'm taking calls on air does not mean
you have reached the 10.
Yes. It's funny because I don't always take people's calls for whatever reason. I guess I'm mean like that. Anyway, we've got Todd from Cincinnati. Todd, how are you doing tonight?
Good, thank you. How are you guys?
Pretty good. What's your question, sir?
My question relates to gun cleaning and maintenance, and kind of like the bore snake that it's simple to use to clean up with a little bit of hot knife solvent.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'm curious what your guys' opinion is of that and how often you should do a full take the gun apart and clean it and oil it versus just using the bore snake after you
Yeah. Well, I will say that I'm probably a bad person to ask because I don't like cleaning firearms, so I very rarely do it. You know, for instance, the gun I'm carrying right now has had about, I want to say, 6,000 rounds put through it since I cleaned it last, you know, 3 or 4 days ago. And I haven't bore snaked it either. So the gun will run a lot longer than you think it will. Mm. It's going to be whatever's comfortable. You keep in mind that you're oftentimes putting more wear and tear on the gun, taking it apart, than you are in just letting it go, you know? So, I mean, running a bore snake through it every 500,000 rounds, yeah, that's fine. Just make sure the gun's lubricated. So, and then you can clean it when you feel like it. I will say this, if you're going to clean your gun, I like to do it before a range trip, because then I like to make sure the gun works after I've had it apart. A lot of people do it the opposite. They'll go to the range, they'll clean the gun at the end of the day. And what's interesting is most of the malfunctions I've ever had with any pistol I've owned has happened after I've cleaned it. And that's a big running joke with Todd Green and I and a lot of the people that follow his stuff, is his guns always jam after he cleans them. Mm. So that's
a good point.
Yeah. So unfortunately, Todd, you were not the 10th caller, but I do appreciate you calling in this evening.
I appreciate your feedback. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. So, free holster to the 10th caller tonight, 1-800-823-8255. There are more callers than I am taking on air, so you may get lucky. Let's see who we are talking to next. We've got Eric from Columbus. Eric, how are you doing this evening?
Not too bad. How are you?
Not too bad. What can I help you with tonight? What is your question?
Well, I am under the impression you appendix carry, correct?
Yes. Yes, every day.
I have been looking into it, and obviously using an empty firearm when doing it.
Right.
I basically need some tips or pointers. I'm not a fat guy, but I'm not a skinny guy. You know, I've got a little bit of a beer gut, and it tends to jet up in there.
I recently started. Yeah, I will. I'll interrupt you real quick and say I am a fat guy, and so I've dealt with this. Appendix carry is going to really be dependent on the holster that you use. Mm. As far as what firearm you're using, too, I don't think that matters as much. I prefer having a firearm that's got a hammer as opposed to a striker-fired firearm, just because when I'm reholstering, I can block the hammer from moving, so I am less likely to shoot myself on accident, which would probably be embarrassing, especially in that location. It'd probably be fatal, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, you either got your femora right there, or you got the goods. So
yeah, or both.
Or both, yeah.
Yeah. Two birds, one stone. Oh, that was a bad pun. Anyway, so that would be my best suggestion is get a good holster. You know, I'm using Darkstar gear right now. I like Spencer Keepers. His Keepers concealment holster is excellent. I don't have as much experience with some of the other ones like the CCC. You know, the problem with the good appendix holsters is oftentimes there is a weight associated with getting one. And, you know, finding something you can use in the meantime is sort of difficult. I will say as far as turnaround time goes, JM Custom Kydex out of, I want to say Vegas or Reno, one of those, they do a 30-day turnaround, which is pretty nice. Now, I had one of his holsters, and it didn't work for me, but that does not mean that it won't work for you. It's so much of it is dependent on you as a person that it's hard to say that, you know, it's this holster will work for you definitely. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. I had just kind of a, not necessarily a generic one, but one that was neutral cant that I was experimenting with. And, I mean, I could fully conceal like a Glock 21.
Right.
Or my P226.
Mm-hmm.
And with no problem, it's just when I went to sit, it was going jamming up into my gut or into my thigh.
And the really good holsters will push that pistol's grip back into you a little bit so it doesn't jet out.
I mean, I don't even – I mean, here's what my weekend looked like. On Friday, I wore the gun for 16 hours. You know, no, actually 19 hours. Part of that was an eight-hour car ride. I got 2.5 hours of sleep, then went and was on a range all day for – you know, 10 hours, and then, you know, did stuff after that, no, more like 11 hours. And then, you know, I drove all day today, and I don't notice the gun, period. So it's all about holsters. I will say, though, Eric, you were not the 10th caller, but I do appreciate you calling in tonight.
And no problem. One more thing I wanted to say real quick.
Yes.
I got my copy of American Rifleman the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, why we've had a shortage.
Yeah.
And that's because of you, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah, all the ammo. I only got it from one company, so it's, I didn't take up too much. But anyway, man, hey, I really appreciate you listening to the show and calling in tonight.
Yep, take care.
Hey, take it easy. So we are up on the commercial break, but we are going to give a free Outside the Waistband Darkstar Gear holster to the 10th caller that's got a question tonight. I'm not answering all calls, so you're not quite sure where I'm at on the list yet. It may be you. Call in 1-800-823-8255. Right now, though, we have to go to break. You are listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
Glenn Beck.
This will blow your mind.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. We're giving away a free Outside the Waistband holster from Darkstar Gear to the 10th caller. We have not gotten there yet. If you would like to call in, 1-800-823-8255. I will try and get to your call, and even if we give the holster away, if you want to hold, I will take as many calls as I can until that point. So let's talk to Dan from New Richmond. Dan, how's it going this evening?
Hey, pretty good. How are you?
Not too bad. What can I help you with tonight?
I got a question on this. With all these insurance things are popping up, like for concealed carry, for the liability.
Yes.
I was wondering what your take is on that.
Honestly, I'm not as familiar with it as I would like to be to want to comment and have it be accurate information that I'm giving you. You know, I like having an umbrella policy on your like homeowner's insurance or something like that. You can get $1 million umbrella policy for pretty
cheap.
Yeah, pretty cheap.
Yeah.
It doesn't cover you for, you know, criminal acts. But if you get no billed and, you know, you get sued in civil court, it will cover you for that.
Yes.
So that's something to look into. You know, not to take away from any of the self-defense specific insurance options, but that's just how I handle that. So.
Oh, okay.
All right. Unfortunately,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Unfortunately, Dan, you were not the 10th caller, but I like that you called in this evening, and I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate that.
Hey, no problem, sir. You have a good night. Everyone is appreciating everyone tonight. I'm very cognizant of how appreciative I am.
They're from Texas. He's from New Richmond, so he might be happy the Bengals won.
Yeah, he might be. So who else do we have? We do have a caller from Texas. Let's take his call. We've got Bill from Allen, Texas, all the way from Allen, Texas. How are you doing tonight, Bill?
Very good, thank you.
Hey, what can I help you with this evening?
The question I've got is, I know a lot of people recommend Surefires, and I own Surefires for lights, but the cost on that is kind of intimidating for a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is there a light that y'all recommend that would, for someone who's just getting into self-defense, but would not be quite as expensive? And I'll hang up and listen.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's actually the Enforce APL is a pretty good light that is about $100. I know Amazon has got some deals on Surefire X300 right now. Last time I was at Kyle's, they had some pretty good deals on Surefire stuff. So, I mean, if you look around, there is all sorts of good stuff. I do have good news for you, though, Bill.
Yeah?
You were the 10th caller.
So,
hey, I'm going to put you on hold, sir, and Eric, the producer, will get your information. We will be in touch. We've got some other callers I'm going to get to, though.
Thank you.
So, let's see here. We've got Brian from Covington. Let's see. Brian, how are you doing this evening?
Good. How are you doing, sir?
Not too bad. What can I help you with tonight?
I had a question kind of regarding along the lines of changing parts between guns.
Yes.
And in your liability. You know, for personal protection, I carry Glock 29, which is a 10mm.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's my concealed carry gun. But at home, I keep actually a .454 pistol.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can load it up with hollow points and I don't have to worry about nearly as much, you know, it penetrating through walls and things like that and shooting into my neighbor's house.
Well,
as I would with the carry through from the 29.
I would actually, I don't agree with that, and I'll tell you why, actually.
Okay.
I've seen a lot of ballistic testing done, especially inside of homes. Handgun rounds and shotgun rounds generally will go through any interior wall that you have. Depending on what your exterior construction is made of, it might penetrate out, it might not. But I would plan on anything that you shoot inside of the house out of a handgun or a shotgun being through the house. What they have seen, interestingly enough, is 5.56, like out of an AR-15. It doesn't penetrate nearly as much. And the reason for that is that the projectiles they fire do not have very much mass, but they are traveling at a very high velocity. So when they strike something, they tend to fragment badly. And the fragments that travel through do not have enough mass to penetrate nearly as much as they would have otherwise. As far as the .454 is a home gun, I don't – if you want my opinion, I can give it to you. If not, you know – I don't know. I've shot 454s, and the follow-up shots with those are not very fast. Your capacity is also going to be limited. And on a human target, you're not gaining nearly as much as you would expect as far as terminal effectiveness. I mean, you're depending on how high the velocity of the load you're using is, you might actually start to see stellate tearing of the tissue, which is, you hear people talk about temporary stretch cavities. Once you get up to around 1,700 feet per second for a projectile, it turns from a temporary stretch cavity to a permanent stretch cavity. And that's where rifles do a lot of their damage. You don't see that in handguns so much at all until you get up into 44 Magnum, 454. I personally would, you know, do more of a service caliber, but that's up to you.
The reason I went with the .454 was just, like I said, it seems to not have nearly as much carry through. You know, it's a really high energy projectile, but it's got a shorter range.
Right.
So I thought that it would expend a lot more of that energy, you know, impacting any surfaces. And, you know, I know it comes back to shot control, and you don't want that errant shot going through a wall.
Right. I mean, and more of this, too, I think that, and gun writers and gun magazines, and I write for a gun magazine, so I'll throw myself under the bus as far as being part of the problem, but I try not to pass along bad information. A lot of people are caught up on the whole one-shot stop and what round can I hit someone with that will stop them immediately. I'm a lot more concerned with how many times can I hit someone with a more controllable round and where can I do it at. I would be concerned, like I said, 454, I've shot them before. I am what I would consider a relatively talented shooter. I'm not like a Vogel or anybody like that, but I've been shooting for a while and I'm okay at it. I couldn't control a 454 with any sort of speed. And I'm a fast shooter. So I think that you're not gaining enough for what you're losing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you carry the 29 during the day, that would probably be good for, you know, at night too. I don't like the idea of switching between platforms, really. But especially when you're talking about a handgun, the more rounds you have, the better. You know, for a home gun at least. And arguably on the street too. I don't know if you caught the Jared Reston interview that I did, but Jared was a police officer that was in a gunfight, and the first indication he had he was in a gunfight was getting shot in the mouth with a 45.
Oh.
You know, and he then went on to kill his attacker. One of the first rounds that Jared fired at his attacker was a fatal round. I think it was the second shot he hit him with. It killed him, but he was still on his feet, still shooting Jared because he hadn't died yet, you know, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
the more rounds you can put into somebody until they stop what they're doing, the better. The longer you get to stay in the fight. I'm going to assume that your 454 is a five shot because I can't really think any 454s that aren't.
Yeah, I don't know if you want me to say.
Oh, I don't care. Yeah,
it's just a regular Taurus Raging Bull.
Yeah,
right.
You know, I don't know, man. It's up to you. It's whatever you're comfortable with. I'm not going to tell anybody they're doing it wrong because I don't have all the answers. I'm not pretending that I do, but from the classes I've been in, especially from the classes I've been in that were based solely around moving around in a structure or something like that, the guys that won were usually the guys that had more opportunity to shoot somebody, you know, if that makes sense. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, if you've got the 29 and that's what you carry during the day, I would stick with that, you know.
Not a bad gun to carry. Really.
No, I've actually carried a Glock 29 at one point when I first started concealed carrying. There's a really excellent self-defense round for that Corbin makes, which is the DPX. It's an all-copper hollow point. It's extremely expensive, you know, when you look at price per round. It's about $2 per round, but it performs really well in all the ballistics testing I've seen. You know, the other issue, and I'll upset the 10mm fans, and then the show will be over so they can't call in and upset me.
Email him.
Yeah, you can email me, John at Ballistic Radio. I'm about to make you mad. The problem with 10mm as a self-defense cartridge is there's not been nearly as many modern designs made for it. So the bullet technology is running a little behind compared to like 9mm, 40, 45, you know?
Yeah, I've noticed there's definitely a lack of
right.
Ammunition innovation.
Yeah, yeah, and that's just in that caliber. But, hey, man, I got a jet here. The show is over. I appreciate you calling in tonight.
No problem.
Hey, sorry, cut him off early. Anyway, next week we're going to be talking to Chris Costa. Also, I'm going to be finishing up the Salient Mark 25 Tier 1 prototype test, hopefully. You can check us out, ballisticradio.com. Follow us on facebook.com/ballisticradio. Make sure you tune in next Sunday, 7 p.m. right here on 55 KRC, the talk station.